Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm the control operator for the Limark Technical Net. It's been going strong for over 44 years now. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radios and chat with each other and exchange information, learn from each other, teach each other, and hopefully entertain each other. And once again, I thank you all for joining me again this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. Okay. If you want to reach me via email, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. So for any reason you need to contact me, that's as good as any email address. If you're interested, I offer a link page throughout the week. I cut and paste interesting articles or videos or what have you onto a link page on the Internet, and I post it for everyone to see, and it continues on for at least the full year. So we'll be opening up a new page for 2026 soon. You can reach it by typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. And again, it's open 24/7 if you have a case of insomnia one night and want to thumb through some articles at least I found were interesting. Give it a try. We also have a chat room open and available. Sometimes it's busy, sometimes it's quiet. You get to it by typing into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com. We also offer an audio stream on the Internet of the Technical Net, and because a few people asked me, I leave it live for the rest of the week. So if you want to hear what's going on in Glen Oaks Repeater, but you don't have a radio, you just go to your browser and you type in technet.ac2gs.com, and that will give you the audio stream. And I like to remind people that KC2NJI has a great archive site called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So if you want to avail yourself of the wisdom of people who have since passed, moved away from the area, or unfortunately become silent keys and passed away, that archive site is available 24/7. So that's the usual links. Let me drop for a sec, and I'll tell you what we got planned for tonight. Okay, a rather vanilla episode tonight, but hopefully an interesting one. I don't really have that much on artificial intelligence this week. There's just some more chit-chat about when the bubble will burst, whether it already burst, whether it's a bubble or a black hole, you know, things like that. You know, the financial indicators are kind of shaky, so who knows if and when everything will kind of fall apart. We'll see. Or if they discover super intelligence and we can obey the great artificial intelligence master that we've built for ourselves. So not much for tonight. We're going to start with the usual main segment of questions, comments, and topics. I'll ask for people with any of those, especially amateur radio related, to hit the push to talk, give me your ID, their call sign, their first name, and whether it's amateur radio related or just general science and technology. And hopefully we'll have enough questions or topics to keep things lively, hopefully until about 10:15 when Paul WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet report. And that should take us approximately to 11 p.m. where I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week and a happy and healthy and Merry Christmas as well. So that's the plan. If everything works the way it's supposed to and stuff in my shack works and the repeater works and I don't get kicked off of All-Star too many times. So with that in mind, let me drop for a second and then I will call for questions, comments, and topics. Okay, everyone. Hopefully we're going to have a real enjoyable night tonight. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion tonight, preferably amateur radio related, but again, we'll take any science and technology related question or comment or a topic, and we'll try and do our best with it. If anyone out there has any of those, please hit that push to talk and give me your first name and your call sign. Well, this might be one of our shorter technical nets. I hope not. I understand, things are tough. It's the holiday season. A lot of people distracted. A lot of people have a lot of other things on their mind than technology and science and possibly even amateur radio. Who knows? But as I've mentioned before, and no doubt we'll mention again, this is not a broadcast. This is a net, and this is a dialogue, not a monologue. So I need someone on the other end, at least one person. Sometimes when we have a lively topic for discussion, we have four or five or even six people discussing it almost simultaneously, but not quite. So once again, I am AC2GS. This is the Limark Technical Net. We're open for business. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics tonight, please hit that push to talk and ID yourself.
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf is here.
Well, welcome, Sam. You have a question tonight, or are you just checking in?
I have two questions. One's personal, and one is more universal.
Okay, very good. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list?
KE2GBE. Name is Danny. I'm listening. Really don't have anything to say unless I hear something. But I'm here.
Okay, Danny, understood. Let's start with you, Sam. Hopefully as the night progresses, there'll be more people with more questions or topics or comments or what have you. So what do you got for me tonight, Sam?
First personal question, did you get a photograph for me?
Yes, I did. I haven't had a chance to open it up yet. I put it on a pile that I could see in my mind's eye, and then I got distracted by something. So I will do that after the technical net.
Okay, fine, Roy. Let me tell you what I'm hoping to learn tonight. I believe I need to hire an electrical engineer familiar with ham radio who can check my house for grounding, look at my radio system and help me ground them, and help me do grounding, bonding, and lightning protection. So I'm sort of looking for a professional to pay to do a full analysis of the house and my station. That's what I'm looking for this evening. Thank you.
Okay, very good. That's a unique one. I don't think I've ever heard that one on any technical net that I listened to or had any part in. If anyone out there, I mean, generally speaking, probably the best kind of guy to do that, I would think, would be someone who needs a little extra money and works for the utility services because they have a deep vested interest in maintaining grounds and such, and they probably know more about the NEC electrical code than the average electrical engineer does these days. But if anyone has any ideas how to find someone that would fit the plans of Sam, please hit that push to talk and let me know.
This is Ed, 2 a.m.
Yes.
Okay, what I would suggest Sam do is contacting the ARRL up in Newington, Connecticut. They have a series of technical advisors that don't do it for pay per se, but they could possibly point Sam in the direction of an engineer who can do that. And they also have a book which the League produces. It's a very good book called Grounding for the Radio Amateur. So if nothing else, it could give them more ideas on how to bond things and ground things, etc., and custom tailor things to his situation. Call the ARRL up in Newington.
Okay, that's as good as a suggestion as any I can think of. I don't think Sam is looking for a book. I think he wants someone who's maybe even licensed professional who does these things for a living and, you know, doing it professionally. But, yeah, sure, it's certainly a good idea. First thing tomorrow, call the ARRL and see if they have anyone on the Rolodex that they could recommend to you. Again, this is a very unusual one. I don't even remember reading any little articles in QST about the subject. It's usually related to what book can I get to read about it rather than who can I hire. But that's an excellent idea.
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf, I have to agree with that idea, at least at the start. And maybe Roy later this evening, if others join in, you can repose the question. Because I am very serious about this. I am ungrounded as far as my equipment goes and my antennas. And what I've done so far has been probably not adequate to what the situation calls for. And I did buy a book on grounding and bonding from the ARRL, and the more I read, the more I realized I don't know. So perhaps you can pose the question at a later point this evening, or some others will reapproach the question if I don't have an answer at another tech night. Anyway, Dwight, thank you very much, and I'll be listening.
Okay, Sam, you're always welcome, and hopefully I'll remember, and we'll have more time to hopefully ask some other people who came in late. We've talked about grounding before, but I appreciate your interest in getting a licensed a professional with a lot of experience, because unfortunately the concept of grounding is a lot like navel gazing among amateur radio operators. You know, we've talked about people who have multiple bonded ground rods versus other people who let their grounds float and don't have them connected to anything. And, you know, if you're fortunate not to be in a high lightning area and you don't have too many problems with static discharges and such, the two sometimes present ultimately with the same problems and benefits. So, you know, some people float their grounds and live to tell the tale without much of a nuisance, and other people have terrible stories of lightning strikes that have decimated their station. So we'll bring up the subject again later on during the technical net. I thank you once again, Sam, for your participation.
Thank you, Roy. I'll be sitting around for a while. Thank you.
Okie doke. Once again, I continue to be Alpha Charlie 2, Gulf Sierra, AC2GS. This continues to be the Limark Technical Net. We're open for business. We got lots of time if anyone wants to use it. So if anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion, please hit that push to talk and ID yourself.
Comment K2CJE.
Yes, Ed?
I watched some professionals do some grounding at a tower that they had just put up. There was quite a number of antennas on the tower, and before they brought all the coax into the building, they stripped off the rubber for about 2-3 inches of the coax, so that they could see the shield. They then wound some wire on top of the shield, then re-insulated it, and thus took that wire, that single wire, like a number 8 gauge, to a ground rod over.
Okay, that's an interesting approach. I don't think I've ever read or heard of anything similar to that. Usually the most that people will do is they'll bond the ground to the outer shielding of the coax, or they put a kind of a lightning arrestor that kind of shorts a high voltage to the ground, but I've never heard that particular example. So that's a commercial company that kind of did this, I assume?
Yes, I watched them. I was curious. So I watched them put up the tower. They had quite a large crane. They installed maybe about 50 feet of already structural steel. Then they had delivered another portion of 50 feet of structural steel and put it on top of the first, and so it was up now about 100 feet. And then some other fellows came, and the crane had a bucket that brought a man up, and he installed all the antennas, and they laced the coax to the tower. And where they had brought all the coax into the building through a hole, which they eventually sealed, they stripped off the outer rubber down to the shield, then wound this wire around, and then re-insulated it and connected it to a ground rod right under the tower over.
Okay, again, seems rather excessive. I can understand it. I think fortunately for Sam and most of us out there, you know, we don't really have towers, and so our antennas are usually not lightning bait as badly as a tower mounted antenna system. So although that sounds like a fascinating bit of work on their part, I think it's a significant overkill when it comes to most New York metro-based amateur radio operators in the area. But again, I mean, there are sort of slight equivalences to that with lightning arrestors and caps for the grounding shield that you can then put a bond to your local, copper pipe that's pounded into the sand and, you know, on your land and such. So. Yeah, I would assume that it would be helpful. Again, I think it's the kind of a little too industrial for most of us hams. But I appreciate your input, Ed, and that's another fascinating story.
Roy, I was wondering whether or not proper grounding and bonding and all that and lightning protection, if it also has an effect on RF radiation within the shack and also an effect on the actual performance of the equipment. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, offhand, usually no. The point most times in grounding is primarily as lightning protection, although you can't be 100% protected, lightning finds a way, or decrease in the amount of static discharge that presents to you, the amateur radio operator, as excessive noise in your receiver signal. It shouldn't really change the radiation resistance of your transmitter antenna system. That's primarily a function of the system and possible reflections and possible common mode currents that are produced from that system, which shouldn't really change much even if you have a very nice ground on your antenna system. So the short answer is it's not going to affect radiation patterns and emissions and your shack, that you're going to need something like a common mode choke as opposed to general grounding principles.
2CJE?
Yes, Ed.
that I've seen these placed. You put it in the bottom of your window, then close the window on it. I guess you have to cut it, I guess, to the width of the window, and people connect the coax to one side, and then there's a through coupling, and then they connect another piece of coax to the other side, and then to the rig. Just offhand, you don't want to go too far to a ground. If you can't pick up that water pipe quick, the best is, I guess, is a ground rod or two outside your window. If there is an antenna strike, you don't want it running around the house until it finally finds the water pipe. I do remember, though, when I was working for a living in a factory, some work done there, and the National Electrical Code for the electric service was requiring three grounds. One ground was the structural steel of the building. Ground two was the water pipe, and ground three was a rod driven at the electrical service. Over.
Okay, we kind of talked about, we talk about grounding a lot, and if you're going to, you know, if you're in the basement, it's rather easy getting to a ground a pipe, a copper pipe, is a short length of wire, but a lot of people are on the first floor, and there's a distance between, you know, their windows or a hole that they can put in the wall, and the ground floor, and so some people, rather than a regular piece of wire, it's always good to have copper strapping for the outside because it's more waterproof than the internal version of that, which is kind of a braided wire that is very flexible, and you know, you can tie it to a grounded bus bar at a window site and then have strapping go down, you know, one floor, you know, isn't terrible. The shorter the distance, the better. Strapping is much better than regular wire. It has lower inductance, so it has lower reactance and impedance, and it allows for the ground currents to flow more easily to the ground. And you have to be kind of careful when it comes to plumbing, because a lot of modern plumbing has non-conductive plastic pipes sometimes. And if you're not aware of the basis of your cold water system, it's very possible if you end up connecting to a part of your plumbing that's not grounded because there's a piece of plastic pipe that's going in serial with your regular old-fashioned piping. So be a little cautious when it comes to trying to ground to cold and hot water pipes because of the possibility of plastic tubing being used in some installations or repairs.
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf. The problem I have is that I'm on the third floor of a brownstone, and I have a 6-foot tower on top of the roof, and the ground I use using or had was a pipe and grounding rod, 6 feet down into the ground, and a copper wire coming up the side of the building, 30 feet to one of those grounding, I don't know what you call it, but I was advised that that became part of the antenna system, and was advised that's not really a practical way to do grounding. That's your right.
Okay. Well, I mean, unfortunately, most of us here in metropolitan area tend to compromise about a lot of things. We compromise about our antennas. We compromise about our ground. I mean, my antennas are on the roof of a two-family house, so it's about a 30-foot elevation. And the same problem is kind of that you have. Basically, what I rely upon is copper strapping that I mentioned earlier. That's the basis for my shack's grounding, In my case, it was just easier to apply it to the cold water pipe that feeds my backyard. And knock on wood, I've been doing that for about 14 years, and I haven't had any particular problems. But again, you know, I live in a metropolitan area with a bunch of houses on either side, in the back and the front, and apartments that are much taller than my house. So the incidence of lightning in the area is basically negligible. So if you live in some areas of Long Island where it's a higher incidence, and if you live on a hilly area of Long Island, that puts you at a higher risk. I've known a few hams that had that type of situation. But again, in my case in Brooklyn, the incidence of lightning strikes is, you have to have really bad luck. It's not like it happens with any regularity. So is it up to specs what you're doing? No. I'm sure electrical engineers and guys at Con Ed would tell you about multiple bondings of ground rods and all kinds of things. You know, a belt suspenders and a staple gut. So it'll be interesting to see what happens if you're able to get in touch with someone and what their recommendations might be. I look forward to that conversation with you.
Roy, of course, I'd be glad to share it with you, and I am going to pursue it, even from an intellectual point of view. There is going to be a speaker at HRU on grounding and bonding, which I will attend that lecture and also explore who might be available when I do that. I look forward to hearing the speaker. He spoke at Limark before, and I heard that was very, very good. Back to you, Roy.
Okay. Again, I look forward to hearing what he has to say. Again, I assume it's going to be more of the same of multi-bonded, ground rods and copper strapping. There's really no way to kind of communicate a ground from, 30 feet to ground level any more efficiently than using a copper strapping wire. But again, it'll be interesting to hear what the details your investigator comes up with, and I look forward to that.
Thank you, Roy, and thank you, the other gentleman.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Ed. Any other comments about this before we attempt to move on?
Comment, Ed, K2CJE.
Certainly.
Years ago, I lived in a five-story apartment house, and I had an apartment on the third floor. So I was quite a distance from any decent ground, and the heat in that building was steam. And the radiator was only a couple of feet from where my rig was, and I used that as my ground. So I don't know. I guess you have to use what's ever available, but from the engineering standpoint, National Electrical Code has all kinds of data on what the resistance of that ground has to be to some reference ground someplace. And if it's not right, you have to drive additional rods, and they tell you the distance between rods. It gets involved with electrical systems, especially if the system is quite large, because they really want the ground to carry fault currents, which can be very large over.
Thank you. Yeah, a lot of this professional detail is going to be in the nature of what kind of multi-bonding grounding system. And because there's not much that you can do at the top of the antenna mount. Again, the probably the most efficient conductor for ground is going to be something like copper strapping. You could make it wider copper strapping. That'll improve its decrease its impedance and make it a better ground conductor. But otherwise, I know of no material other than copper strapping that is recommended for the conduction wires for the system. You know, the rest is just bonding. I would, though, add that although you might be able to get away with plumbing systems, as long as you make sure that there are no insulating plastic pipes involved in the plumbing that you expect to be part of the ground system, the one thing you shouldn't rely on, I think everyone, probably 95% of the community, will tell you not to use as a ground is your utility ground itself. The utility ground is subject to current leakage that does not make it the greatest ground available for amateur radios to use. It's the easiest one because almost every relatively modern house has a three-prong connection outlet that you could kind of tap onto and use. But again, I think it's not a good idea to use the utility ground from an outlet as your RF ground.
Roy, how would you test a grounding system if you put one in? Is there a way to actually test it?
I don't know of any simple one. What some people, I think, do are use voltmeters and such to see there are voltage fluctuations. It should be, you know, 0 volts. If you hook up, if you're bonding two grounds together and you plug in a voltmeter and you get a difference of, a half of a volt, that kind of suggests that there's something a little wonky with your grounding system. But other than voltage fluctuation readings, I'm unaware of any kind of relatively simple way to judge. I mean, you could test for the general resistance of two electrodes by, plugging in a resistance, a volt ohmmeter and, set it for ohms and see how many ohms, I don't know exactly how you're going to interpret that, other than lookup tables and such.
The professionals have a piece of hardware for that.
Yeah, but how expensive is that piece of hardware?
Probably is, and we're not going to go out and buy one to use at once. The professionals have a piece of hardware that tells them the resistance of that ground. And if it's a large building, I know they always have multiple grounds for the electrical service. And they use welding, believe it or not, between those different rods. It gets quite involved and quite expensive over.
Yeah, there are companies. If you go into DX Engineering, I think they sell a small thermite packages that effectively weld your copper strapping to your ground rod. Yeah, grounding is a fascinating subject and open to some interpretation because RF ground is called ground and DC ground is called ground and a few other things are called ground. So, common connections are also designated in schematics as ground. So it's a confusing topic, but a useful topic.
Hey, you can feel.
Yeah?
Good evening, Roy. I don't know if anyone's mentioned it, but the Motorola standards and guidelines for communication sites document is widely available and covers many, many topics, just such as this, for industrial and mobile applications. Sorry, I just got to the net a couple minutes ago, so I don't know if it's been mentioned. Thank you, Bill.
No, it hasn't. There's a lot of literature on the subject and books available. The ARRL has a book. NEC has a whole phone book size book. Sam, AE2YG, was more interested in contracting a professional to do an inspection and recommendation rather than a source of, you know, read it and do it yourself type of thing.
Roger, sorry, I missed that context. Back to that, I won't interrupt unless I have further questions. Hi.
Okay, very good, Jeff. Any other comments out there on this particular subject, feel free, hit that push to talk. Yes, David?
Good evening, Dr. Roy. We're talking about grounding, and my question is, in New York City apartment buildings, would the fire escape be considered ground or maybe?
No, I would not. I do not believe there is any requirement to physically ground these structures to earth ground. It would be useful as a counterpoise in some cases if you scrape the paint off of it and you use the conducting wire as a counterpoise. It can be useful, but as an actual earth ground, no. It doesn't provide you with the ability to do what you can do if you have ground rods, plastered into the underside of your ground. So short answer is no.
Well, the ground area around this building is only about 2 feet deep, just a little bit of dirt inside of a moat. So, there aren't too many choices. Maybe a cold water pipe or a hot water pipe. Go ahead.
Yeah, we talked earlier. You have to be kind of cautious. Modern day plumbing often uses, I think they're called Plex. They're non-conducting plastic-based pipes. They sometimes, when they have to repair a pipe, instead of putting a metal pipe back into where they sorted the damaged one, they'll put a Plex plastic pipe. And once they do that, you've kind of broken the circuit for any kind of ground conductor. So if you're very, very knowledgeable about the plumbing involved in your apartment house and you're pretty sure that they're not using Plex all over the place, you might use that as a ground. Not perfect. It's another compromise, but, you know, if you got nothing else, then that's what you stuck with.
Thank you, Roy. I do the best that I can.
As do most of us. You know, as I said before, this is not a professional endeavor for any of us, and metropolitan area-based stations are compromises from the very beginning. So no one has room for an antenna farm or towers or, often multiple ground rods with multiple bondings, and we try as best we can, and most of us, thankfully, get away with it.
QSL, yeah, it works pretty good. I can't complain. KG2R1.
Yeah, I mean, again, a lot of people float their ground, either because they have no choice or because they have no interest. And most of the time they get away with it. They might have other problems, ground hum, static discharge, but apparently nothing that limits their use of the hobby. And thankfully, lightning storms that ruin the electrical equipment, amateur radio equipment and such, are few and far between, at least in my area. I'm not really aware of any significant problems. There are places for some strange weather pattern problem reason, you know, in Long Island, where the incidence of lightning strikes is much higher.
Well, it would be great if that mode of dirt that goes around the building, that could be maybe 8 or 12 feet deep. You know, that would be really good. And then the other thing is, I think it's a...
I think you fell out of the repeater again.
I might have been doubling. There's really nothing I can do about the mold of dirt that goes around my building since it's only two and a half feet deep. If it were 8 or 12 feet deep, maybe then there could be a possibility.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, there's something below that that couple of feet. But the problem is, yeah, it's highly dependent upon your area. I mean, some very fortunate amateur radio operators live off the beach. Their soil is rather sandy, rather salty, and it has an excellent capability of operating as a ground. Others, you know, they live on a rock. A lot of Manhattan, fortunately for the sake of those skyscrapers, it's just granite down there. And granite doesn't make a hell of a great earth ground. It's not very conductive. So, again, you know, there's all kinds of different grounds. And for people who like to play around with antenna simulation software, one of the nice features, relatively new features, I think introduced about 20 years ago, was the ability to change from a standard earth ground to different quality of earth grounds. And that would improve the predictive nature of how an antenna system operates.
MFJ, MFJ made a artificial ground. It was supposed to do what a ground could do. In terms of performance and signal, I found that it didn't do very much at all for me.
Again, the problem is that 15 different things are called ground. The artificial ground does not operate as a lightning, a means of capturing lightning and driving it into the ground, because obviously it's not a ground that way. All that the artificial ground ultimately is a counterpoise. It's a tunable counterpoise. So it's not an earth ground in the same way as you want to connect things to lightning arresters. It's an earth. It's a ground in the same way that a ground plane is a ground. It's fine if you need a counterpoise for an unbalanced antenna. It's useless to produce any kind of lightning safety measures.
Yeah. What if your antennas that have counterpoise attached to them? Is ground so important after that?
Again, grounds are different. If you're looking to tune an unbalanced antenna, all you need is a counterpoise to operate as a ground. If you're looking for lightning protection, something similar to it is insufficient.
QSL. Well, you know, everything seems to work pretty good. I connect a ground hub to a hot water pipe using a brass clamp. And then from the hub, it goes to each device and connects to the, it's like a you turn screw into the radio. The copper strap attaches there.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully that will lessen your chances of having static discharge show up on the front end of your receiver. So your reception to signals will be a little bit easier for being grounded in that way. Again, it's not going to really produce a great deal of lightning protection. If lightning strikes your antenna system, it'll kind of find its own shortest path to earth ground. It probably won't even touch your plumbing. It'll probably just kind of skip through the side of your building and just kind of blow up things as it travels down. But thankfully, again, the possibility of some strange errant lightning strike hitting your antenna, there's a lot of other metallic objects out there at higher elevations very near to you that will kind of bleed that lightning off to other sources, sites, loads, what have you.
Well, if lightning is nearby and the static charge reaches some antenna, some object on the roof, you know, static and temporary, it could affect the radio and also the devices that are connected to it. What I did, you know, for each device is I put the grounding switch. So, you know, when I'm not using it, I keep the switch on off position.
Okay. A lot of people do that. We talked about Alpha Delta last time I looked, as standard. Well, they also had lightning arresters that you could hook it to ground, internal lightning arresters, although it's always good to keep the lightning outside your house, and usually switches are inside because they're not the most weatherproof objects. They have switches where if you can set it to a null position, which grounds all of the antenna connections internally to itself. So, there's a lot of connectors that are capable of doing similar things. A lot of times, old timers especially will say your best choice is to unscrew the coax connectors and have the have part of the connector outside, not inside your apartment, your shack, what have you, during a lightning storm, so that if it picks up anything, it really has no easy method of getting into your house. You want to keep it as far away from your house as humanly possible, because that's where 99% of all your electrical equipment is.
QSO. For HF, I use dial-with switch. Up to 600 megahertz, so the rating, you know, it applies to HF. And then I have a diamond switch, which the rating is like 1300 megahertz. I use that for my 2 meter 440 radio.
Comment in one way,
yeah. Yes, thanks.
Yeah, back when I lived in Norwalk, so we're talking 25, 30 years ago, I had I bought a house from a ham, and he had one of those external things hooked up so that you could unplug your antennas before they got into the house. And I'd always thought that was just a source of losses, because every connector, I think, is worth some fraction of a dB. But anyway, I had a lightning strike, and we took out the block on the side of the house that was where the connectors all went, but we didn't get anything in the house. I had an HF tri-bander and a two-band 447-70 centimeter antenna up at the time. I don't remember which one showed the greater amount of damage, but I was really glad that the house had all that, because I probably wouldn't have done it myself.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a useful belts and suspenders a way of dealing with lightning. It's probably one of the better ones. You just do not want to give it any access into your house and then want to ground it to the outside of your house. Once it gets into your house, it can go any place. So that's a good move. And I wouldn't be terribly concerned about the insertion loss of a extra connector or two. There's more than a dozen YouTubes available where guys, as long as the connectors are legitimate and not faulty to begin with, I've seen where they string, you know, 12 different connectors in series with each other and put it on a watt meter and demonstrate that the watt meter has such a negligible loss you can't see a difference in the deflection. So, you know, if you're worried about losing, you know, a tenth of a percent, then you got other problems. But, you know, one extra connector or two is not going to impact. There's so many other more important things that impact on insertion losses than properly built connectors.
Waiting on me, I'm done. And one whitey white.
Okay, very good, Hank. Any other comments, David?
Not particularly. I had an experience with my HF radio where I took off the external speaker and everything was the radio, and then thing is much more. I'm wondering if the external speaker somehow was not for this radio.
It's possible. Have you ever experimented to see, you know, why it is that antenna switches are specced for different bands, different frequencies? Did you ever wonder what would happen if you took an antenna that was designed to use for HF and used it for VHF or UHF? You're repeatedly falling out of the repeater. You may be about 10 or 15% of your transmission is being picked up by the repeater.
I'll have to check 259.
I don't know what's going on, but you just keep on falling out of the repeater. I can't make out your last transmission. If you try that experimentally to see what the hell's going on, well, what happens is the reason why some antenna switches are specced for higher frequencies than others is the amount of isolation between the connectors and the switching. So that, you know, if you use a properly specced antenna switch, you effectively switch out the RF from one connector to another connector. If you use a spec for HF, for UHF and VHF, the RF is going to bleed across all the connectors. So that's one of the important reasons why antenna switches are specced for bandwidth. That At higher frequencies, less expensive HF design switches will have little isolation, and it becomes almost like a hub instead of a switch.
You are so. Well, these switches seem to work for me. I can't complain for that. You know, I've been trying a whole bunch of results.
I haven't found any particular, you know, as long as you have a properly spec'd antenna switch, you know, there are Japanese and Asian. I never quite figured out who manufactures the Daiwas. At one point I thought it was Japanese, but I tend to think that the Japanese contract another Asian manufacturer and they license it. But nevertheless, you know, I haven't had the opportunity to try any Chinese ones, but I'm sure there's a few that fail. You know, as long as you you mind what the frequency, you know, specifications are for antenna switches, they tend to work reasonably well.
Yeah, I use them in the on and off position. So when I'm transmitting, it's in the on position, and when I'm not transmitting it, not using the radio, then it's in the off position.
Okay, well, you can certainly do that. I've never kind of gotten into that habit. I don't really see the particular purpose. Again, you know, if there's going to be a massive lightning strike like there was a couple of nights ago, I'll disconnect things. But you know, other than you know, if it's a nice, regular, calm day, you know, I'm not really given to turning the antenna switch into the on and off position. I leave the antennas connected to the rear of my receiver. I turn the receiver off, so it's not going to blow out my front end. But aside from that, I don't really shut it or disconnect antenna feeds that way. But, you know, each to their own.
Well, there's an advantage, you know, to have a switch. One side is your radio, and the other side could be a walkie-talkie, some other device. You know, you can just connect it, you know?
Well, yeah, I've done that more than a few times. I have different radios, and you can switch connection from one radio to another. In some cases, when I'm mindful that I can't transmit but just to receive, I'll use a splitter. So, you know, two or three different radios can receive a signal from the same antenna as long as I don't hit the transmit button.
QSL. Signal splitter, or is there another name for that? Duplexer?
No. A duplexer is, well, I think you mean a diplexer. A diplexer is a way of utilizing two different frequencies for an antenna. If you have a radio that has a VHF connection and a 220 connection, and you have a antenna that's banded for both of those, you would use a diplexer to split the signal from the antenna into the two inputs. Duplexers are those structures in repeaters that allow for nearby splitting a signal to receive the ingoing and the outgoing signal is close but not identical, and you want to block each from the other circuitry. So that's a duplexer. But what I'm talking about is just a simple splitter where, you know, you get a 3 dB loss because you're splitting a signal between two different radios.
Can you transmit from one radio or the other connected to the simplexer?
I think you mean a diplexer. You can transmit through a diplexer to the antenna because it should kind of isolate the two frequencies if they're wide enough. If they're not different enough, that's where things like duplexers that have very high Q filtering and are much more expensive than a diplexer. You can pick up a diplexer for $100. You can pick up a duplexer for a couple of thousand.
So let's say you have an antenna It's a 2-meter antenna. You want to transmit on a 2-meter frequency. You want to receive 600 kilohertz below. You transmit and receive at the same time.